Zach and Aaron Camaro. All right, welcome back to the Decibel Geek Podcast. My name is Aaron Camaro, and where in the world is Chris Sinzak? Chris Sinzak's on vacation, but he's going to be joining us here in just a few minutes as we sit down and talk to Jeff Scott Soto. Now, let me tell you something, people. Even if you're not a huge Jeff Scott Soto fan, and why wouldn't you be? This guy is amazing. But even if you're not, you're really going to enjoy today's conversation because it goes all over the place. And this was one of the most fun ones I think we've ever done. So I think Sonny Pooney will even be proud of us for our conversation with Jeff Scott Soto today. And mostly it was thanks to you guys who sent in some awesome questions and made it real easy on us. Now, to kick things off, how do we do it? We take care of the business. Well, problem with that is I have no idea if we have any reviews. And honestly, I don't even know where to go look. Chris is the technical one. He handles all that. What I do know is we've got a whole bunch of geeks of the week. Yeah, this list is pretty big. That's pretty wild. Last week, we do the new noise. Chris tells us the story about Vinnie Vincent wanting to come back and piggyback off of Rockin' Pod 3. That's not happening. No way. And Chris laid it all out for us. And everybody seemed to dig it. You know, the new noise thing, it started out as kind of a, oh man, what are we going to do? We ain't got time to research nothing big. Let's just talk about what's current. And it turns out that's something you guys really seem to dig. So look forward to more of those. So let me run down the list here real quick because I actually gathered the Geeks of the Week. I can handle that much, right? Well, here we go. Geeks of the Week this week are, these are the ones they shared and retweeted last week's episode. These are they. James Nicholson, Dodd Vernon, Scott Crouch, Christina Green, Sam Bone Promos, James West, Mike Grabowski, Rock and Ron and Decibel Geek TV, Greg McGlone, Warren Edward, LaRue Baker, Matt Ashcraft, Aaron Baker, and the Bakery Podcast. Josh Toomey, of course, of Talk Toomey Podcast. You guys got to check that out. Also, Baco of Cobras and Fire. Check them out. There's so many great podcasts out there that we're friends with. It's pretty amazing. Martin Wenham, David Davis, Kevin Williams, The Mighty K, Eric Sinzak, the brother of rock and roll, Marianne Cowley, Mrs. Cowley, Mike Parnell, Ray Kuhn of the band Dawn of the Rising. They got a new album out called Airwaves. He sent it to me. It's freaking awesome. Go check out Dawn of the Rising. Ridiculous Rock Record Reviews, Otto Erlen Gregerson, Adam Cox, Chris Aiken, The Classic Metal Show, James McElhenney, Adam Cox. Oh, I said that already. Maybe this isn't as easy as I thought. Derek Laba, Brant Cattell, Mikhail Burrell. Oh boy, I'm getting worse. Mark Alden Taylor, Bill Elam, David Glynn, Freeform Rock Podcast, Joe Lascon, Jay Shabluski, Anthony Britt, the CGCM Podcast, our Canadian homeboys, Wally and Rich. Nice. Let's see. Trevor McDougall, Kiss Army Omaha, Rob Harris, Greg Troyan, Podcast Rock City, The Kiss Room, Rock and Metal Combat, Shane Hebert, Simon Catt, Wayne Cross, Shane Hargett, Mike Parnell, Joseph Capone, and of course, the Mooger Fooger. All right, let's see. Well, since I don't have any reviews or anything, let me just get all this stuff out of the way before we get into our awesome conversation with Jeff Scott Soto. I got to tell you, there's some really, really cool stuff going on over at DecibelGeek.com right now. The Meister and Sean Animalize Irwin, they have taken over Sweden, going to all kinds of rock festivals. I know Sean has sent back a bunch of awesome photos from Sweden Rock. And the Meister, man, he's writing reviews and he's been all over Northern Europe, hitting every rock and roll show along the way. And you can check that all out at DecibelGeek.com. Tom Cornell's got an awesome review of the new Death Angel album, Humanicide. Sammy Hagar in The Circle. Yeah, it's a new band. A lot of Sammy Hagar fans, I know. You might want to check this out. Jeremy Bernardski checked it out, and he's going to let you know what it's all about. Check it all out right now at decibelgeek.com. Do it. It's an awesome website. A lot of people put a lot of hard work into it, so you can enjoy it. And you know what? If you like us on Facebook, then you already know all that stuff because Coxie's there, and he's giving you all the news, letting you know everything that's happening at decibelgeek.com and making it fun, you know, leading the conversation over there. If you have not liked Decibel Geek Podcast yet, well, check this out. At last check, we were like a mere 117 likes away from 7,000. Invite your friends. If you got friends that are rock and rollers, It's really easy. All you got to do is head on over to the Facebook page. You'll see the little button there that says invite friends. And what you can do is just go down your list of friends and invite them. If they're cool, they'll accept it. And more, the more conversation. And that's what it's really all about, because, I mean, the conversation's been bigger and better on Decibel Geek Facebook page than it really truly ever has been. And that makes it a local music scene with a worldwide audience, or whatever, however that goes. Let's see, what else? Oh, Decibel Geek TV. Hey, Rock and Ron's got the latest video episode of The Wolf Den up, and that includes some backstage stuff with Tora Tora and Slaughter. He's also got footage of two of Rock's best tribute acts, Van Halen and Idol X. That's Van Halen and Billy Idol tributes, and you got to check those out. Also got some cool stuff with Babylon AD. It's all over at decibelgeek.com on the YouTube. And hey, Ron needs some more videos. So if you guys are out there, you're catching bands, all you got to do, film a complete song. Not cut off halfway in between. Not a song and a half. One complete song. Or more than one. Just as long as they're complete. You send them over to Rock and Ron. That way he can make up his little MTV-style stamp for the bottom corner when the video starts, just like back in the day. And that's going to have your name on it, the venue it was recorded at, the date, and all that good stuff. So you'll be internet famous, thanks to Rockin' Ron Runyon, and the fact that you were rocking out at a show anyway, and you probably took some video, but you just took the time to make sure you got a complete song, and look at there, you're on Decibel Geek TV. So how about that? And of course, I gotta tell you about Rockin' Pod 3. That's August 9th and 10th in Nashville at the Nashville Hotel Marriott. There's gonna be live music Friday night with 8 Ball, Lipstick Generation, and the Rock and Roll Residency and friends. That's right, because you never know who's going to be jumping up to jam with these guys. I know for a fact that some of them are. And let's just think about it for a second. Who's all going to be at Rockin' Pod, right? That's on the 10th. That's on Saturday. These people are probably going to be floating around on Friday night. Want to have something to do? Want to get up and jam with the Ace Frehley / Gene Simmons band, right? The Rock and Roll Residency. Who wouldn't want to do that? So who could be possibly jumping up on stage with them Friday night? Well, at the Rock and Pod Expo, we're having the entire Roxy Blue Band, Drew Fortier from Zen from Mars, Jeremy Barber from Green Jello, Stephen Chereau from Kick Tracy, Drew and Jim from Wildside, Rick Rule from Every Mother's Nightmare, super producer Toby Wright. I don't know if he's going to jump up and sing anything. Jack Gibson from Exodus, Erie Vaughn from Danzig, Jason Beeler from Saigon Kick, Brian Forsyth from Kix, and Michael Sweet from Striper. That's just to name a few, because I know Chris Sinzak isn't done yet. He's still trying to find more guests. If that wasn't enough, he's still out there trying to find more. He needs to be on vacation, take a couple days away and recharge all this. But I mean, it's amazing, because any one of those guys could jump up on stage with the Rock and Roll Residency, and who knows what they're going to play. Actually, Chris had told me a little something, and I know I'm not supposed to say anything, but he told me the possibility of a couple of songs that Michael Sweet may possibly be doing on Friday night. And if he does and gets up and does these songs, this is something a Striper fan, or hell, any fan of rock and roll, has got to see this, because it's going to be a once-in-a-lifetime thing. I'm telling you, it's pretty crazy, crazy awesome. So then what do you got? You party down on Friday night with us at the pre-party, and then the next day, because you were probably smart and you stayed at the Hotel Marriott, so you were right there, you didn't have to drive nowhere, you got done partying, you went up to your room, you got some sleep, you came back down, boom, Rockin' Pod Expo. What's going on at the Rockin' Pod Expo? Well, there's a company there, or a group or something, they're called PBX. They're going to be there to teach you how to podcast, or maybe just how to podcast a little better. There's going to be vendors there with LPs, CDs, and rock memorabilia for you to purchase, and then take on over to your favorite rock stars and get it autographed, because they're going to be there. Lots of rock swag for you to check out. The Rockin' Pod Museum, it's got some important pieces like historic rock history, and you're going to be able to check that out. One of a kind stuff. Last year, they had some stage-worn stuff from Stars, like crazy 70s outfits. They were super cool. You're going to have chances to win rockin' raffles throughout the day. That's going to be amazing. Plus contests. There's going to be a rock and metal-themed cosplay contest, so you're probably going to see people dress up like Kiss, hopefully Twisted Sister, maybe some Wasp, maybe some Gwar. I want to see some people dress up as Gwar. How cool would that be? All that, plus your opportunity to meet the rock stars themselves for photo ops and autographs. Man, how cool is that? That's Rockin' Pod Expo 2019 on Facebook. You're going to find all the links right there to get you your tickets, your hotel discount, so you can all stay right. We're going to all stay right together. We're going to keep each other protected within the rock and roll of our floors and our rooms. So get in on that and do it quick before those rooms are gone. You want to get in right by us, right by the rock stars. We're going to party together. We're going to all sleep in the same area. It's going to be like rock and roll camp. Amazing. I can't wait. So check that out. All the links, everything you need to know, rockinpod.com. How sweet it's going to be. There you go. I blew enough time, so let's get to it. This is pretty amazing. I don't know how much you guys know about Jeff Scott Soto. Oh, wait a minute. Yes, I do, because Sonny Pooney taught us all about Jeff Scott Soto. Well, today we're going to learn a little bit more, because this guy was the coolest. He told us, ask me anything, and we took our own questions, plus the questions our friends submitted at the Facebook page, and we laid it all out on the line. Enjoy this. It's myself, Aaron Camaro, and my good buddy Chris Sinzak, and we sit down and talk to the one and only Jeff Scott Soto.
How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing great. How you doing, man?
Oh, good. I'm so happy to have you on the line. I think you've done like all of our friends' shows, and it's finally our turn.
Yeah, finally.
So I think we want to promote the new record, which is cool.
Sure.
Do you mind us going through some?
Anything you want to talk about.
Okay. So
that's cool. We got like a grab bag of fan questions, too.
We do. Yeah.
Let's do it. Let's do it all.
All right. Awesome. Cool. Well, Jeff Scott Soto, welcome to Decibel Geek.
How you guys doing?
We're great, man.
Yeah. It's great to have you.
And what part of the world are you in today?
I'm actually still back at home. I'm working on the new Sons of Apollo record while I'm doing all the promotions for the new Soto record. So nice. It's a nonstop process, and I wouldn't have it any other way.
Awesome. And yeah, Sons of Apollo, that there's been so much good press for that album, and that was one of my top albums of the year. And that song, Coming Home, and this is just for my own curiosity's sake, to me it sounds like almost like a modern metal version of White Room by Cream. Am I far off on that?
I'll take it. I mean, we weren't going for that, and I don't personally hear that, but you know, that's a classic song, and anytime you're going to, if it depends on the song you're going to compare me to.
Okay.
If you're going to say, yeah, it sounds like a modern day version of Achy Breaky Heart, then I might be offended.
No, you haven't done your country album just yet. But the main riff in it just has kind of the similar chord structure to White Room. And I'm like, this is like White Room on steroids. I love that song.
Yeah, I think it was more based or derived from The Who. You know, The Who always had those kind of ascending keyboard lines like Baba O'Reilly and stuff like that. Yeah. And I think that's also where the idea of doing that shriek at the beginning, that crazy ass scream that I do. Mm. I think that was kind of reminds us of The Who, and that's I wanted to kind of pay homage to Roger Daltrey.
That's cool.
Very cool. Hey, speaking of Achy Breaky Heart, I know we got some really great fan questions, but I got one for you. There's a legend that you and Phil Soussan, along with Tommy Thayer, way before he was ever a member of Kiss, made a country song. Is that true?
I think it was a pop song, but I think maybe they did a country version of it later. I'm not too sure about the actual. My memory's really foggy, but I remember doing a song that Phil had written, and it was more of a pop flavor. It wasn't rock at all. And maybe somewhere along the way, they did a country version of it. I don't remember if I sang on that version or not, because again, that was so long ago. I mean, yeah. It's a great question, because you basically stumped me. It's something I actually sang on. But I don't remember what our version ended up sounding like. So I'd have to ask Phil if we ever did that version or that kind of spin on it. But your guess is as good as mine.
That's cool.
Mystery.
Well, my first experience seeing you live was with Journey here in Nashville on the Journey Def Leppard tour at a place called Starwood Amphitheater. It's no longer there anymore, but
pity.
But
yeah.
That was.
Yeah, I remember meeting what's his face, country dude, Australian country guy,
Keith Urban.
I can't remember his name right now.
Is it Keith?
Yeah, Keith Urban. Yeah. He was there with Nicole Kidman. And I remember them after in our green room saying hello to them. I guess they were friends with some of the Def Leppard guys. And of course, Keith is a huge fan of Neil Sean's, you know, naturally guitar players. They kind of bond.
Yeah.
But it was really cool meeting them. And yeah, I remember that gig.
Yeah, that was it. Was a fun night.
Only in Nashville.
I don't remember much because I had several beers before we went into the show.
But you see.
But I was sober enough for you guys. I was drunk. I was drunk through Def Leppard. And I remember Neil coming out and doing the Star Spangled Banner at the beginning of the set. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. That was something he did. I think he did it just at a 4th of July gig, and it went over so well, he just decided to keep it in the intro because it just he played it so great.
Yeah. So with that gig, I know you've talked about it a million times, but just for our curiosity, like, I mean, how do you end up getting that gig, and did you know those guys going in beforehand?
Well, yeah, Neil and I had the band Soul Circus the year before. We'd done, we met in 2004. So at that point, we already had 2 years under our belts. And in 2 years, it didn't take him long to realize that Journey was so in my bloodstream, in my DNA, even though, I never set out to be a Perry clone. He knew I was so well steeped in that world because both Perry and I were basically raised on Motown. We were raised on soul music. So even not necessarily sounding like Perry or trying to be a Perry clone, we come from the same, we cut from the same cloth, so to speak.
Right.
So knowing that, it was an obvious decision. And they were in a bind. Neil knew I could handle the entire catalog, and I knew the entire catalog without reading on a teleprompter or sending the guys off to a rehearsal so we can get the set down. I mean, I literally got that gig. I flew out, and with no rehearsal, just a 10-minute sound check, I was on stage in front of 22,000 people.
Wow.
So it was the confidence that Neil had in me because of the band that we had before. Mm. Otherwise, he wouldn't have known that. He wouldn't have known that about anybody, that he could just call on the Johnny on the spot and get just fly him out and do the tour.
Right.
And yeah, it was a great experience. I absolutely love singing and fronting one of my all-time favorite bands, you know, since I was a kid. You know, it didn't unfortunately didn't end the way I would have liked it to, but in the end, it was an amazing experience, and I wouldn't change it for the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, such a unique experience, too. How many guys get the, like I said, the experience of taking over lead vocals for such a huge, well-established band? What's the best part and the worst part of a situation like that where you're coming in and replacing somebody in a band that's already iconic?
Well, the best part is the obvious. Everything I've already explained, it was it's a dream come true that all the songs that you've sung in the shower, in the car, with your friends on a party night out, in cover bands, in karaoke, all those amazing songs you've done basically all your life, to now be doing them with the band that created them was a dream come true.
That's awesome.
But obviously the worst part of it all, aside of being canned, the worst part of it is a situation like, say, jumping into Queen, where Freddie Mercury is gone. There's no way there will ever be a Freddie Mercury to come back into the band.
Right.
The fact that Steve Perry's alive and well and active or inactive, nobody really knew. They didn't really care. All they cared about is that he's alive and why is he not fronting his old band?
Right.
So you get slammed from all places. I mean, Jerry got it, Arnell got it. Everybody gets it because Perry was the originator of those amazing songs and those you know, that voice is just undeniable. So you get in a situation where, hey, well, hang on, this is not the guy that replaced Perry. Perry's down the street, you know, going to baseball games and making appearances. So he's clearly active and he's alive. Why do they have this clown?
Yeah.
So that's always the hard part, you know, getting over that hump of being accepted when the other guy is still out there and able still to do it.
Mm-hmm. Makes a lot of sense.
Now, it would have been different if, you know, if Perry was in the same situation as somebody like Freddie Mercury. And, you know, you guys want the music, you want to see the band live, you're going to have to love it or lump it. This is what we're giving you.
Right on.
That's true. Did you ever end up crossing paths with Steve Perry at any point?
Not during this situation, no. I met him through the years. Basically, the early 90s, I think, was the last time I saw him. First time and last time I saw him, because he's such a recluse. A recluse, I don't know if you want to call it that. He's just a very private person. And when he lays low, he lays low. You don't know where he's at. You don't see him. You don't hear from him. He's got a circle of people that he trusts, and that's it, you know. I met him, I think the last time was in 91 or 92, and I haven't seen him since. But it was pretty incredible for him to step up in my defense when he did a very rare interview he did with a buddy of mine, Andrew McNeese. And Andrew brought my name up, and Perry went to my defense saying that he thinks Journey made a mistake, that of all the singers or anybody they could have gotten, they should have stuck with me.
Right.
And that alone is the biggest validation I could ever get in my lifetime.
Absolutely.
That somebody like Perry, somebody I hail and I have such high regard, actually stepped up for me like that without me saying it or asking him to. It was just a really neat thing to happen.
Yeah, for sure.
Coming from him, that really means something.
Yeah, no kidding.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, and it probably came from a place where he knew that the band were getting guys that were trying to sound like him or just trying to emulate him. And I think what he meant by that validation was that I could have taken them to another place without necessarily having to copy the place that everybody knows them from. So, and again, I'll take it for what it's worth. I think it's an amazing validation.
Speaking of recluses, you do have a history with, I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up the Vinnie Vincent connection. And one of our friends named Sonny Pooney, who's interviewed you, and he's literally a walking encyclopedia of Jeff Scott Soto. And he,
God bless Sonny.
He's wonderful. And he actually sent Aaron and I, it was like a biography of you. It's a full hardback book and everything with your whole career in it. Have you seen that book?
I don't think so.
Oh, wow.
I got to reach out and get a copy then.
Yeah, I'll tell Sonny to send you a copy.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Cool.
But like, Vinnie Vincent has always been a very interesting character, and I was like really looking forward to opening this book to see like, well, I got to see all the Vinnie Vincent stories in here. And I open it up, and it basically is like, Jeff got demos, sang on the demos, end of story. So it was like, there wasn't a lot of one-on-one connection with you and him, I'm hearing.
Well, yes and no. I mean, again, Vinny he was a very soft-spoken, quiet guy. He's not a wild rock and roll character, like especially what he was portraying himself to be either in Kiss or with the Vinnie Vincent Invasion. You know, he was very outlandish with the colors and the freakishly fast guitar playing, etc. But behind the scenes, he was a very soft-spoken, delicate family man. Mm-hmm. The small experience I have with him was exactly that. I was singing background on, I think it was a couple of songs on that Vinnie Vincent Invasion album, but Mark was actually singing background on the entire Cooney album because we were doing both albums simultaneously. Dana was producing Cooney during the day and then Vinnie Vincent at night at the same studio. He was doing double duties. Mm. So Mark was coming in with us and then met Vinnie before, but one day we just got to talking and he comes from that same background. He loves soul music. He loves the whole Motown thing. And so he goes, man, just knowing your voice and knowing your characteristics, I think you would be great for these demos that I wrote. He wrote songs for a publishing company. He had a publishing deal that he had to turn in X amount of songs per year. You know, they were giving him pretty good dollar for writing songs for like Celine Dion and Michael Bolton, that kind of thing. Mm. So he said, these songs have no rock value whatsoever. They're really pop, borderline R&B pop. And I'd love to have your voice on just getting them done so I can submit them to my publishing company. And that's exactly what they were. Everybody thinks that we were working on a project together that just never happened or it was nothing of the sort. He was just fulfilling his publishing agreement and I got to work with him at his house and he was really particular in what he wanted and how to sell them because clearly they couldn't have any rock and roll value whatsoever. They would not fit for what he was actually signed for.
Right.
So these songs, I guess they were completed by the time you became involved in it. Does that include the lyrics?
I wouldn't go so far as completed. They were really, really the borderline terrible demos. Because, again, when you do those kind of songs, you don't want to really paint them too much towards the way an artist would sing them if they were doing it as an actual song or for an album. So he didn't want it to sound too much, have too much characteristic and too much personality because clearly that's whoever's going to hear the song and when they're pitching it to a particular artist, it's going to be typecast. Right. So it had to be pretty, how do I put this?
Kind of generic,
I'm trying not
huh?
to, yeah, just really simple and really no personality behind it. I'll leave it at that. So the demos themselves were really just skeletal. And yeah, exactly that. He wrote the lyrics, he wrote the melodies, and I was just basically connecting the dots.
Right.
Was Vinny in the studio when you were doing the vocals?
Again, not even a studio. It was at his home studio, and back then, home studios are not what they are today. He had a very basic home studio. We did it in his living room converted studio at that time.
Gotcha.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, again, I know because there's always been rumors for years that, you know, well, Jeff Scott Soto was almost the singer for Vinnie Vincent Invasion. And I know that went around a lot, but I know you've cleared it up over the years.
Well, you know what? I will extend to that because I'm not going to say that I was going to be in the Invasion, but when Slaughter was already fully on their way, Vinny wanted to continue, and he was getting new songs together with Fleischman and myself, either to release as a new solo album or the next version of Invasion. And he did bring me in the studio for that. I don't know. I don't remember if it was for backing vocals or if it was to sing lead. But again, it was just another miserably failed attempt at doing something, and it went nowhere. Right. And to be honest, at that point, I knew Vinny enough to know that it'd be best for me not to get involved with him, because it's so difficult. I don't want to talk badly about anybody, but Vinny's the kind of artist that kind of needs his hand held, and to kind of, he expects others to do everything for him as opposed to running out and doing it himself. And I didn't want to be in a situation where I had to hold somebody's hand. I always like to surround myself with people who are as ambitious as I am, and you know, that we all have the same kind of game plan.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't have been for me. Let's just leave it at that.
I gotcha. Cool. Well, thanks for clearing that up for us. My favorite one of the listener questions, which comes from our friend Baco at the Cobras and Fire podcast. He said, have you ever witnessed Yngwie unleashing the fucking fury?
Many a time, unfortunately. And you know, it's again, I've gotten to this point in my life where bashing or talking shitty about other people or even if it's the truth, it's not going to get anybody anywhere.
Sure.
Of course it makes for everybody talking, and it makes for blabbermouth headlines. And that at this point, I've got nothing bad to say about Yngwie, whether our relationship is fractured or not. That was my beginning. That was my humble beginning. The guy trusted me to front his band, to step up and actually front his band. He gave me that trust and respect. So as far as I'm concerned, I got nothing but love for the guy for giving me that opportunity. That was the launch of my career. Without him, it might have gone somewhere else. It might have taken longer, whatever, however you want to slice it.
Sure.
But the way that history designed itself, I'm so happy that I was able to do that stuff with him. And we planted a seed of greatness as far as I'm concerned. So to this day, it's such a pivotal album. It's such a pivotal sound that we created, or I was able to create with him, that I get high regard for. So
yeah.
I'm not going to talk any more shit about the guy. You know, he's his own person. He's the way he is based on, you know, he's always been that way. It's not like he became an asshole because he was a rock star. He had a vision, and he doesn't like anybody getting his way or anybody to try and take that away from him. Right. So I got to respect that.
Sure. Another question from among the listeners were you ever considered for Trilogy?
No, because I was already out of the band by then. Okay. It was my decision to leave the band, and obviously they had to replace me, and they got Mark Bowles at that time. But it was only because Mark wasn't working out while that tour was actually happening that I came back to the fold. I was working on one of my first bands I left the band to join up with Rudy Sarzo, Tommy Aldridge. But when that didn't happen, I started my own band. While I was launching that, I got a call from Yngwie's camp saying that they were having issues with Mark on the road. And if they let him go, would I consider rejoining the band to step in for the tour? And because things were so slow with what was going on with the band I was starting, I welcomed it. I needed the cash. I needed I could have used the extra notoriety of stepping back in with Yngwie. So it worked out for both of us. He needed somebody, and I kind of needed him.
Yeah. Well, would you ever work with him again if he extended the offer?
I used to say no. I used to say hell no. I used to say so many other versions of fuck no. But at this point, I would exercise any attempt at even for the sake of relationships, just because, as I said, at this age, as I'm getting older, I'm seeing friends going, I don't want any animosities. I want to leave this earth with peace in my heart. And that goes with everybody that I've ever worked with. It goes with everybody I've ever known.
Right.
So in the sense of getting to that point, I would do it in a heartbeat.
Gotcha.
You know, back in the day, Bob Kulick was able to get you two guys back together on a track for that Butchering the Beatles tribute album.
Oh, boy, did we. Did we butcher it.
Oh, man. That Magical Mystery Tour cover you guys did is one of the coolest cover songs I've ever heard in my entire life. It might be the best.
Thank you for that, because I was waiting for you to say, why did you guys do that?
No, it's so cool, man. It's so cool.
Well, and I'm glad they went with that title, because anytime you do a Beatles cover, anytime you do a cover of any classic song, it's usually butchered anyways. But the fact that they kind of use the metaphor of butchering in the sense of heavying it up, you know, when it's butchered, it's like it's bloody and it's meaty, and that was the metaphor they were going for. But on the other hand, they were kind of doing a little piss take in the fact that you guys, that this is not your normal Beatles cover. We're literally butchering the Beatles.
That's cool. I love that album myself.
Is that the kind of situation where you just get like a MP3 or a wave or whatever of what Yngwie's done and then you lay your vocals on it? Or is that something you guys actually spend time together to create?
No, everybody was done separately for those tracks. I went into the studio and worked with Bob to get my vocals done after the all the guitars and all the main tracks were done. And then whatever was left over, they overdub later, and then they go to mix it. None of those sessions were done together. Maybe a drummer and a bass player, but none of the tracking with guitars and singers were done together.
Mm. So do you ever get a chance to call Yngwie and be like, man, nice job. We really killed it with that one.
No, we haven't had any communication whatsoever since 2009 when Marcel Jacob took his life. Yngwie had his kind of issues with Marcel, and I just found it a bit disrespectful that Yngwie didn't just brush it all under the rug. You know, his old friend was dead now, and the fact that he wouldn't acknowledge it, and in fact it was the opposite. We would reach out to Yngwie trying to get even just to get the news to him, much less to get an acknowledgement. And when it was completely brushed and didn't want anything to do with it, that's when I said, Marcel was he was my brother. Mm-hmm. For somebody to do that, I really took it offensively. But at this point, you know, I'm reaching out. I'm sending out the olive branch. And as far as I'm concerned, that's water under the bridge. I really don't care why or what. It has nothing to do with me. It had nothing to do with me in the first place. I shouldn't have taken sides. And I would welcome any chance to resurrect my friendship with Yngwie. And the same goes with Neil Sean or anybody else I've ever worked with that's kind of fractured or seems fractured. I just don't want that kind of... I want peace before I go. You know, we're not getting any younger here. And as I'm seeing people go and just like, I don't want any regrets. I don't want anybody thinking of me any different than I am. The kind of person I want to be represented.
Right.
That's cool. I can dig it.
And speaking of Sonny Pooney, he had a question. He's asking, is there music you have done with some of your heroes that has never seen the light of day? And will you release a Gene Simmons style vault?
Well, I don't want to speak too soon, but I am talking to Frontiers Records about something special. I have a 20-year anniversary with this company coming up in a few years, mm-hmm. and we're talking about something really special to get to be doing. But I don't really have anything out that's sitting in the kind of vault, so to speak, that's never seen the light of day. Pretty much everything that I've done is out there in some form or capacity, even if it's out there as a bootleg. Mm-hmm. So you know what? I don't think so. Okay. I don't think there's anything out there that I'm going to shock the world with. Like, whoa, how's he been sitting on that for this long?
Right. Gotcha.
That's too bad. Hey, speaking of Gene Simmons, way back in the day, you helped out the House of Lords on their debut album with backing vocals.
Right.
Was Gene around during that process? Do you have any run-ins or, I guess not run-ins, interactions with him in the studio?
No, he was never in the studio. Well, not when I was doing backing vocals. It was basically a day or two that they delegated just for backing vocals. So in those 2 days that I was in the studio with them, I never met Gene there, but I remember House of Lords. I went to see them at the Forum. I forgot who they were opening for. And I was backstage and Gene was there, and I've known Chuck Wright for, I don't know how many years. And we were just talking and he goes, oh, I got to say hi to Gene. I go, dude, you have to introduce me. I've never met him. He goes, you never met Gene. Oh, well, come on. I'll introduce you, because that's naturally how you want to be introduced to your peers. You don't want to just go up and, hey, I'm Jeff. You ever heard of me?
Right,
it's kind of wanky. Right. So I went with Chuck to go meet him, and he goes, hey, Gene, this is Jeff Scott Soto. And, hey, you know, Jeff, this is Gene. And I remember him going, oh, Jeff Scott Soto, the man who'll sing on anybody's album for a buck.
Oh,
I'm like, are you kidding me right now? That was my first introduction to Gene. He just couldn't help himself.
And you should have said Gene Simmons, the guy that will slap the Kiss logo on anything for a buck.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I thought of it years later. It's like, oh, the guy who put his image on a coffin, you know, for a buck.
Yeah, but then he pulled out a buck and said, I got something for you, Jeff. I need your help with this House of Lords album.
One thing you learn in this business, don't try to heckle Gene Simmons.
Oh, yeah.
Because the guy's far too clever. The worst you can give him, he's going to give it to you tenfold.
Yeah, he's been around for a while.
Yeah.
Oh man. Well, one thing I want to add, a couple of Saigon Kick type related things. Well, first off, you're doing all this whole series of shows with Jason Bieler around the country, and I'm a big follower of Jason Bieler, and he's actually going to be a guest at the Rockin' Pod Expo that I put on every August.
Yeah, we're excited.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and we're excited to have him there. Would love to have you there if you want to talk about it, but this has been interesting, and he's definitely one of my favorite people on social media to follow because he's one of the wittiest people I've ever seen.
But absolutely.
How did that brotherhood kind of come together, and how did it get rolling?
Well, I've known Jason since 1988. It's crazy. I've known him that long. I've known him as long as my son's been alive. Oh. And my son just turned 31. So we were supposed to do something. When I first met him, we were supposed to do something that never surmised. And he was nobody. He was just a snot-nosed kid with a great guitar riff. We finished the first Talisman record. We needed a live guitar player. The guy that played on the first album, he had really bad stage fright. I said, hey, I know this kid. He's really good. He's in Florida, and I think it'd be great. Let's see if he'd be interested. Jason came on, did that tour. He basically finished that tour, came home, and started Saigon Kick, and we stayed friends through all the years. And I watched him develop and become who he became. I think it was a couple of years ago, I basically told him when I knew Saigon Kick was on its way out again, I said, man, I have this bucket list wish. We could do one Saigon Kick show where I'm fronting the band. I mean, it would be so fun. I love those songs. Mm-hmm. I can imagine how fun it would be to do it.
Yeah,
and so he put that in the back of his brain as he was going out and venturing into this whole acoustic troubadour thing. He goes, dude, why don't we team up? And first of all, the first time I came up and did Love Is On The Way with him, it went over so well. He thought, man, we could have some fun doing this kind of stuff. We do an entire show together because, as you said, he's so witty. The banter that we have together, it's just undeniable.
Yeah.
So that's how it started. It started with coming in for one song and turned into, why don't I do a few songs with him? And now it's turned into we're taking this thing as a serious roadshow. We got an agent and we're doing the whole thing now.
That's so cool. When I confirmed him for the expo, I said, can you send me a preferred photo you want used? And he sends me a picture of his head superimposed on Napoleon Dynamite's body. He says, will this work? And I was like, well, can you send me something a little more serious? I'll use that one later down the road because it is glorious. But he sent me all these hilarious pictures of his head superimposed on other people's bodies. He's so funny.
Awesome. Of course. Yeah. I love his wit. I love his goofiness. And it's perfect. I just love the guy.
Yeah.
He had alluded to something in that book that we were talking about earlier about his early days in Talisman. And something about studded leather lederhosen. Can you fill in the story on that?
That's probably another Jason elaboration. I don't think, unless something happened where I wasn't a part of, Bielerism.
Yeah.
You didn't force him to wear them in Germany or nothing like that?
No.
Who knows then? Thought there'd be a funny story behind that.
Well, you know what? I'm not going to blow it. I'll just leave it open-ended. So if there is a funny story, I'll let him say it. But okay. As far as I'm concerned, I wasn't around for something like that.
We'll ask him at Rockin' Pod.
Yeah, we'll ask him there. And then on staying on the Saigon Kick thing, I'm sure you remember Tom Defile.
Yeah.
Okay, so he made a comment on here and said to ask you about your experience singing on the first album. An interesting story. He sang on Come Take Me Now and My Life, a big debacle about theory. We put minor over major, not done. Ask him that stuff. And why you haven't said hello.
Well, Tom, I absolutely... It's actually through Tom that I met Jason because they knew each other. This is before Saigon Kick. And I got a referral for Tom as a bass player from Wally Voss, who was the bass player in Yngwie on the Trilogy Tour.
Mm.
And he knew I was doing something new, and Tom was looking to relocate to LA. And he said, you know, check out, I do bass classes with this guy. He's one of my students and he's really good. And he's the one that referred him to me. And so Tom flew out. I met him. And through that, he was playing me some demos, some things that he'd done. And on guitar was Jason. That's how I knew about Jason.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's a common thing for people who are not schooled theoretically with music to do major over minor. They just do things because they sound cool or they think it sounds cool. But then when somebody, some asshole like me comes along and says, you guys realize that doesn't fit or that note doesn't work over that chord or that doesn't work over that phrasing, they look at me like I have three heads. And it's Jason was no exception. He's not schooled. He doesn't have theory. he just basically does things because it sounds good or it sounds right to him. Mm-hmm. And when I try to correct it, okay, that's great, Jeff. Thank you for your masterclass, but this is how the song goes.
Okay. That's awesome.
I saw it and I'm like, should I ask this? I'm like, why not? You said ask you anything, so I figured I would ask it.
Absolutely.
Okay. And Billy Orico, who's actually the drummer for Angel, he chimed in. He said, in 2012, you were one of the vocalists along with Mark Martel for the Queen Extravaganza tour. And he just wanted you to speak a little bit about that whole experience.
That was a lot of fun. I got to be honest, the only reason I did it is because, one, I got an invitation from Roger Taylor himself. The others all auditioned for that thing, and they had three singers for it, but they didn't, out of the three singers, they basically wanted enough singers to be able to cover the whole spectrum of Queen, but there wasn't one guy that could cover all the, you know, all the elaborate sides. There's one guy, Mark Martel, was great for the real nostalgic side of Freddie. Then they had a girl singer that they brought in. They had another guy that was really high singer. He had the really nice top end stuff, but they didn't have a rock edgy singer. So Roger asked me if I'd be interested in doing it and be kind of the rock representative of the Queen Extravaganza. So I said yes on that alone. Cool. And yeah, it was a fun experience. Those guys are mega talented. The whole band, all the musicians involved, singers, etc. So it was a lot of fun to do. Queen is one of my favorite bands of all time. So to be able to pull all those songs off live without any tracks, it was amazing to be able to sing Bohemian Rhapsody from soup to nuts. Wow. Live, you know, with no tracks.
That's a challenge.
And so it was a lot of fun recreating all those harmonies and all those lush backing vocals. And it was just a lot of fun. And I got to do the rock stuff. I Stone Cold Crazy, Tie Your Mother Down, you know, that kind of stuff. And Mark and I did a great, great duet of Under Pressure, which was a lot of fun to do. So, yeah, it was a great experience. But kind of the same answer as with Journey. I think after a few years of doing it, I would get kind of sick of singing somebody else's legacy.
Yeah,
I think if I lasted in Journey, especially knowing that the Journey fans are basically, they're the diehard core Journey fans that are only there to hear Don't Stop Believing and Any Way You Want, etc. There wasn't any real place to take Journey where I could have actually left my own mark, like Sammy Hagar was able to do with Van Halen, or Bruce Dickinson was able to do an Iron Maiden. That ship had sailed. Mm-hmm. And I think after a few years, I probably would have walked from Journey just the same, because I basically would just be in a tribute band at that point.
Right.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
So in 89, you are in a band called Christ the Conqueror, where basically you're kind of the lead singer of the Misfits. How does something like that all come together?
Because I was not in the band. That was a paid session. I didn't know anything about the Misfits. I wasn't a fan of that style of music.
Wow.
But the guys themselves, Mo and Jerry, Mo and Doyle, were so freaking cool. The greatest human beings. I really felt like a brotherhood around those guys. Nice. So I did the record basically as a hired gun. They were hoping that it would turn into a real situation where we could do it live and we could actually tour and all that. But it just wasn't in my DNA to do that kind of material. So right. I did the record just as a paid session, and I walked from there. Yeah, and it's become like a cult underground favorite. But that was as far as it was. To me, it was no different than what I did with Vinnie Vincent.
Right. It's like punching a clock for that one.
It was just such a pleasure to work with these guys. And of course, from there, I started doing my homework and get a little more education on who they were and what they were about. I was like, geez, I didn't realize I was actually working with rock royalty here. These guys are legends.
The, wow.
The whole thing that they left behind was just legendary. So cool to be, to also be a part of that whole scene, right, even inadvertently.
Yeah, you're looking down the Misfits family tree, and you're like, Jeff Scott Soto.
Right. It's kind of crazy. It's crazy when you think, even just put all of that into perspective. Misfits, Queen, Journey, Yngwie Malmsteen, Rockstar. It's just crazy when you think about all the different flavors and the ingredients that it takes to be even in any of those bands. But the fact that I was able to pull them all off is pretty fun.
Yeah, it's remarkable.
It's a hell of a career to look back on, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Joey Quesada is saying, ask him to confess his love for me.
Oh, my God. That wrestling wannabe freak.
He said, trust me, he'll get it. So I don't know what this story is.
Absolutely. Well, Joey, obviously, I don't know if you know who Joey is.
Sure.
He was in the band ZO2 with David Z and Paulie Z. Mm-hmm. And I met him. I saw them do a few shows before the band actually split up, and I've gotten to know Joey just through the Z Brothers, and I love the guy. I love that band. I love the TV show they had, the Z Rock thing. Yeah, Joey's. We have, without being that close, we tease and pick on each other like we're the best of friends, and that's what I love about Joey. So he can go fuck himself.
Oh, there's the Easter egg for the show. I'll just play he could go fuck himself at the beginning, and people will be like, who's he talking about?
Blabbermouth Jeff Scott Soto tells episode. Joey Quesada to go fuck himself.
Yeah. Oh, man.
That's awesome.
So, and I had a lot of people mention the current band WET, I guess, or do you call it WET, or do you just call it WET?
It's called WET, yeah. Okay. And it's a project. It's a studio project that was pulled together by Serafino, the president of Frontiers Records. It was a pet project of his to take. It was kind of the beginning of all, you know, the makings of all these supergroups and the collaboration groups that he's been doing. This was pretty much his first one. And it was an idea of just take these three strong songwriters and mm-hmm. see what they would come up with if you put them in the studio together.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what it is. It's a studio project. We've done a few live shows here and there, but by no means are we looking to make this a regular thing like touring and another extension of what we're already doing.
Right. Well, and I know I'm a massive fan of Eclipse. I think what Eric does is just incredible.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah.
He's a great singer, songwriter, producer, all of the above, musician. Yeah. It's such a joy and a pleasure playing with those guys, recording with them, and hanging out with them.
Yeah.
But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, the only two real things in my life are Soto and Sons of Apollo. Right now, those are the only two focuses. Everything else is stuff I'll do in between, everything I'll do on the side.
Right.
But those two bands are my number one priority.
So let's get into Soto, because I know that's the one of the reasons we wanted you on, because, you know, we need to talk about this new record. So take us through Origami. Like, I've listened to several of the tracks. It's incredibly well produced, well put together, well written. I mean, it feel that and Sons of Apollo, like they feel like they're part of the same universe in a way. Like I think they both kind of coincide well together.
Well, they do, and that's also by design that we're on the same label as Sons of Apollo. It was because I'm working with those guys. I kind of planted the seed of who I am, and then I'm still a force to be reckoned with outside of this new group that I was fortunate enough to be asked to sing in front. The label and I've become really close, and when I told them I was working the new Soto record, they wanted to talk to me first before I took it anywhere else. From there, I was able to get Soto on Inside Out Music, and I'm so happy about that because we're under the same umbrella for a lot of reasons, but the main one is that we can focus on the album cycles with the proper perspective. When the Sons of Apollo album first came out, there was a JSS album lumped in between and a WET album shortly thereafter. Mm-hmm. And it was a little too much JSS in one time, in one lump. And I think all those albums would have fared better if they were separated a little more. And this is what I love about the Soto record. We can really concentrate it on this year while Sons of Apollo are recording a new album and the guys are doing their other things. Mm-hmm. I could really concentrate on the focus of this band and this album. And then once that cycle's run the course, then I can start concentrating on the Sons of Apollo cycle. So that's exactly why, and even musically, I told the guys, hey, we're going to be on a prog label now. Don't hold any bars back. If you get a little proggy-woggy, a little out there musically, more power to us, because I think it'll be an easier sell for the label, who normally have only prog bands, for them to be able to kind of generate across to them. But we can also concentrate on the rock side of where we're originally coming from.
Right.
That's cool. That's got to be a tough problem for the Jeff Scott Soto fans to have, huh? My favorite artist comes out with too many albums. Oh, man.
Well, the funny thing, the fucked up thing about it all is there's a lot of people complaining about Soto being too heavy, or it doesn't sound like WET, doesn't sound like JSS. Well, guess what? It's not supposed to.
Right.
Soto is a band. It's an entity. It's its own brand. It's its own thing. It's not supposed to cross over to Talisman and all those other melodic hard rock things. Soto is supposed to be heavier and edgier, more modern and contemporary. That's exactly what I'm going into it for. Otherwise, why would I be doing it if it sounded like everything else? Why wouldn't I just stay with the things that sound like that?
Right.
You just call it all the same.
For all intents and purposes, I'm not really trying to garner in or hook in the JSS fans, because they're not going to like it. I'm trying to open myself up, open the band up to a whole different audience. an audience doesn't even know who Jeff Scott Soto is, as far as I'm concerned. That's what I'm trying to push Soto towards, because Soto deserves its own legs, its own branding, its own audience. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to have to try to keep cross hybriding the set list. Oh, well, we have to play I'll Be Waiting. We have to play this particular ballad from this particular band because that's what Jeff Scott Soto fans want. I don't necessarily want to keep crossing the sets over that way. Mm-hmm. I want Soto to be its own brand and its own thing, the way Sons of Apollo is, the way any of the other bands that I'm part of are, yeah. That we don't have to rely on my past to pull up a set list.
Right.
Makes sense to me.
Is that, I mean, and is that more exciting and fulfilling to have like a project like that where you can kind of throw all the energy into this is its own thing. It's going to stand on its own and we're not going to rely on anything I did in the past. Or is it a scary thing to do that?
All of the above.
Yeah.
It's scary because we get the resistance of the JSS fans not really wanting it. So therefore they're not going to support it and accept it. So if we're doing a tour, for instance, or we're doing particular shows, you have basically everybody's out there waiting for me to do a commercial hit from the past or something that's more familiar to them. Mm-hmm. And they're going to walk away disappointed because this is its own entity. But on the other hand, without the proper promotion, without the proper push and aiming and targeting the audience that we're trying to get, they're not there either. So yeah, we have kind of a double whammy problem we're dealing with. And that's why I'm so happy with the new label we're with. And I'm hoping that they finally see the vision and they know how to target the audience that we're actually going after.
Right.
That's cool. And one thing I noticed, I was watching some videos, some interviews and stuff you'd done with the band on the on YouTube. And one thing I noticed is that the Soto band, they really seem like they got a lot of good chemistry, both on and off the stage.
And that's one of the reasons why these guys were my first pick. And I didn't want a new band. When Soto came together, I did not want another new band, another new name, etc. But the first Soto album, for all intents and purposes, was the next Jeff Scott Soto solo record. But it was too heavy, it was too different, and it was too modern. At the time, the manager at the time I was working with said, dude, I'm not going to be able to shop this and get a deal on as a Jeff Scott Soto record. This sounds too much like a band. My recommendation is that we put a band name behind it and we brand it as a band. And I'm like, oh, geez, another name, another thing you got to lump me with. And he said, make it simple. Call it Soto. It's already got your identification with it behind. Everybody knows it's you. Anybody that already knows who you are knows it's you. You don't have to say Soto featuring Jeff Scott Soto. That would be stupid. It would be unnecessary.
Right.
And from that, I was able to kind of rebrand myself and rebrand what I was doing with this new band, who were basically my solo band. They were the hired guns that did my solo tours, and we had such a great chemistry live. I never treated these guys like they were my hired guns. I always treated them with the same respect as an actual real band, and I got that in return from their performances. And so from that, we built such a chemistry camaraderie that it was a no-brainer when it was time to say, okay, this is going to be the new band. You guys want to be part of this, and let's just, now we're official. We're going to do things as a band, as a team.
That's awesome.
The man whose resume never stops growing.
Are you guys going to hit the road for this record?
We just announced a European tour that's going out in September. We did a South American run, a short one, but to be honest with you, I have to see a little more interest. I have to see a little more in terms of people getting on board with what we're doing here, because you book tours to promote records, but if nobody's showing up, mm-hmm. you're pissing in the wind, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And I would rather demand catch up with the level of what we're doing and what people could expect us to do.
Right.
Because I want the band to go out there and play for people, not just to go out there and promote a record and nobody shows up.
Right.
So that's exactly what we're doing. The album's out now. The record company's about to go into high gear with the promotion. If we can get enough interest out there, I'd love to take this worldwide with this band.
I suppose that's got to be extra tough for a band like Soto, because you guys are from all different corners of the globe, aren't you?
Right. We're representing three continents, yes.
Wow.
But to be honest with you, even a band like Sons of Apollo, with that pedigree, with the level of musicianship we have in the band, et cetera, even we had not a rough start, but it was the same rough start any new band would have. It wasn't right out of the gate just successful and selling out. So you got to earn your stripes, man. You can't just go out there just because you're a super group or people think you're going out there with capes, you know, that you're going to be selling tons of tickets. You still got to go out there and prove yourself and earn it.
Yeah. And it seems like, you know, a lot of older musicians or older bands, I'm noticing a trend. It's like, it seems like the ones that kind of tend to do well with their projects are incredibly active through the social media thing. I know they may not like it, but it seems to be like it's like you have to sort of feed the beast. And then others that, you know, don't tend to do well, they just like, they, well, our record company put it out, go buy it. And it, I mean, do you,
right.
You had, it seems like you really have to work the social media a lot these days.
Absolutely. Well, it's the new medium, you know, everything's changed and you kind of got to roll with the changes or you die with the changes. So you accept them and you learn how to utilize them. And that's exactly what a lot of us have done or have had to do. It took me a while to get into the whole game. I didn't like it at first. I thought it was more for dating and meeting people in that sense. I never liked the idea behind it in the sense of needing it to actually promote yourself. But when you think about it, it's free promotion. It's not too shabby when you get to go. You don't have to pay somebody for the amount of exposure that you normally would have back in the day.
Right. And it's
you can reach your exact fans.
Yeah. It's like, it seems like it's a great level of interaction with the fans that you never had back in the day.
Yeah. It's got its plus and minuses like everything else,
sure.
But you roll with the punches, you learn how to make them your own and you see what you can do from there. That's the game.
That's cool. I really like the new album. One thing I wanted to ask you about, and I was going to say, anybody listening to this, as soon as you're done, you need to go and check out the video for the song Hypermania.
Yeah.
Man,
oh, yeah.
That is crazy. Tell us about this insane video for this awesome song.
Well, we use the same director that that did the first video for us. The very first album was a song called Break. And we had to, again, because exactly what you said, we all live in different corners of the earth. We had to film it in our own home territories. And then this guy pieced it together, trying to make it look like we were together in it.
Oh, wow.
This time around, we were able to do our filming, even though we're not together in the same scenes. We were together in the same building when we were shooting our scenes. And this guy is such an amazing, Tiago Kiss is his name. It's a really cool name. What a rock and roll name, Tiago Kiss. He's a Brazilian, he's a musician himself, but he's also a director, photographer, and he just has great imagery ideas. Even when he sent the treatment, I'm like, dude, I don't know if we can afford this. This is like a real video. He said, no, I'm doing this within the budget of what I was told that we have to make this video. So
nice.
He really went all out for us, and I couldn't be happy with it. It's just, it's creepy, scary, cool, modern, edgy, all of the above. It's got all the pieces of exactly what I want Soto to be seen and represented as.
Yeah, it's wild. You got to check it out if you haven't seen it.
Yeah. So let's just wrap things up. And thank you. Oh, what?
I've got a couple more questions.
Oh, you do? Okay, go ahead. My apologies.
Being that Decibel Geek is recorded and produced right here in Nashville, Tennessee, we can't help but spend any amount of time that we're allowed to with Michael Wagner. We've had good talks with Michael Wagner about all the cool stuff he's done in his career. I got kind of a two-part question for you. Number one, how awesome is Michael Wagner? And two, are we ever going to hear the version of See You on the Other Side by Ozzy with you on vocals?
That's amazing. I'm so bummed. Well, first of all, yeah, part one, what an amazing guy. What an amazing producer, amazing human being. Just it's such a joy to be in the same room with this guy, mm-hmm. especially work with him.
So
but yeah, I met him obviously through Saigon Kick when we did the background vocals on the first album. And he brought me in to do these vocals. It was originally supposed to be backing vocals for two songs for Ozzy to kind of map them out and get him ready to kind of demo them or whatever. I think it was only the end portion that was missing. So we were trying to build a backing vocal part, like a choir kind of thing, but there was no lead vocal for us to bounce off. So he had me listen to the majority of the song, and he said, maybe can you try just ad-libbing the way Ozzy would at the end here? And that's exactly what I did. I actually sounded like Ozzy. I thought what Ozzy would put here. And from that, we were able to build a backing vocal section. But that was a lot of fun. And I love Wagner so much. I run into him pretty much every year on the Monsters of Rock cruise. And what a phenomenal guy.
Yeah, we love him. That's awesome.
Very cool. So speaking of Michael Wagner, Michael Wagner's talked to us before, and he's talked about a Pink Umbrella song. Now, what a Pink Umbrella song is a song that an artist may have recorded or had a hand in years ago, never really took off, never really did anything, but someday, damn it, somebody's going to find this amazing song and do something with it so big that it's going to put me on a beach with a drink with a pink umbrella. Jeff, what's your Pink Umbrella song?
Hypermania.
Well played.
I'm going new school. I'm going the one that just came out. I love this song so much. It's got such a cool modern vibe. It's got all the elements of what you would expect from me, but it's also got elements what you wouldn't expect from me. It's got a heavy factor. It's commercial. It's modern. It's cool as shit. And then the video's cool as shit that goes along with it. I hope this song resonates, especially, like I said, the label's about to kick into high gear with the promotions this week, starting up this week. So I'm hoping that song hits it now. But if it doesn't, I'm hoping that when I'm 70 years old and in a beach with a pink umbrella drink, that somehow it actually gives me a second drink. You know, I really do have a lot of hope for this song.
Wow, that's impressive, especially considering your resume and output over the years is about 10 miles long.
Yeah.
Well, I wasn't going to say I'm a Viking. I don't think that's going to resonate towards a newer, younger generation eventually.
No, I don't see that as something for a Nissan commercial someday.
Maybe Volvo.
Maybe Volvo.
That's cool.
All right, I've got one more.
All right.
And I've been dying to ask this because this is a band you don't ever hear of. And I know you've been in the studio with so many different great bands over the years, helping out, you know, thick up their sound, make their vocals a little better. But this is one of my all-time favorite bands. They only really officially came out with one album. No, it's not Striper, but they're awesome
too. All right.
No, this is one that
about the Against the Law album.
This is an underrated band that a lot of people don't talk about. Everybody loves Striper. I'm talking about Pariah, the album To Kill a Mockingbird.
Right.
This band, I always felt
that was Tamaka Killingbird.
Tamaka Killingbird, that's right, of course.
Yeah.
If this band could have had the opportunity that they should have had, I think they could have been just amazing and had an amazing career. I think maybe they were a little too late for what they were releasing.
That's exactly what it was. Yeah, they were a little late at the game.
A few years earlier, I think that album would have been huge. It's an amazing album with some great, great songs on it. What was your experience working with Pariah on that album?
Very little. They were all kids. They were just fresh out of, I don't know, high school or maybe a couple of years after high school. They were just kids. I mean, I remember meeting them in the studio when I was doing the backing vocals. I felt like such a grandpa next to them. They were from Austin. They had a great, great album. They had a lot of great songs, but unfortunately, they were day late, dollar short, as they say. And strangely enough, one of the band members was dating somebody that became a big movie star eventually. That was Renee Zellweger. Yeah. I met her at that session. She was a nobody. She still lived in Austin and wasn't even pursuing acting at that point because she was so young. And it was just, it's amazing to say I met her then, but she wouldn't know me from Adam at this point.
Right.
And again, yeah, that's the last record I did with Tom Werman before he went into retirement and then brought me back in to do the Rockstar soundtrack.
Wow. Yeah, I always loved that album.
Yeah.
Nobody ever talks about it, but it's so good.
Yeah, we've spun tracks from that several times on the show. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Right.
All right. We got any other great grab bag questions or anything?
Well, you brought up Striper. Can you explain a little bit about your involvement on the Against the Law record?
Well, I met those guys my first tour with Yngwie. They were big fans. I think I met Oz at our show in Pomona. And I was a huge fan of theirs before I even joined Yngwie. So we became friends instantly just out of the respect for one another. I used to go see them all the time. They would always have me as a guest, you know, on their guest list to come see them. And one time they were playing at Six Flags. Six Flags had an outdoor stage, kind of like a mini amphitheater stage. And they were headlining that. And I was planning to go see them anyways. And they asked me if I would come out and duet with Michael. I'm like, are you kidding me? Yeah. So that's the first time I actually sung with Michael. I think it was like 87 or 86. Man, it was a long time ago. So from that, and that's also before I met Tom Werman at that session. It was the same thing. I got a call from Michael. He said, hey, dude, we never bring any outside singers or musicians, etc. But for this album, we want a tougher sound. It's our first secular album. Mm-hmm. So I want it to sound tough and more just hardcore. Yeah. It's going to be heavier. It's going to be, but when we sing together, it sounds too angelic. Would you come in and try a couple things to see if we can thicken up our sound? I ended up singing on the whole record with them because they loved the timbre of my voice mixed in with theirs. And it really had a new, fresh, exciting sound. Mm-hmm. And I worked so fast and so well with those guys that Tom Werman remembered me. That's how we started our relationship, of him hiring me for every backing vocal session he did until he retired.
That's cool.
Wow.
But yeah, it was a great thing on that record. From that, I sang kind of like a duet line, as well as backing vocals for a song that they did on the Greatest Hits album. And that's just before they split up, before the first split up, I guess. But I think they needed the Greatest Hits was fulfilling their contract with Hollywood Records, and then they put a song that Michael wrote for the troops during the Iraq thing that was going on in the early 90s. So that was again an honor to be. I was singing like a counter lead vocal line to Michael Sweet on a Striper song. That's like, dude, you kidding me? This is awesome.
That is awesome.
That's two pretty amazing vocalists in one room.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Cool, man. This has been a great time talking to you. And where can people pick up Soto Origami? What's the best place to go to find out more about it?
Well, if you're from the ages of 9 to say 30, I would say hit it up on Spotify, on iTunes, on Apple Music. iTunes is on its way out. YouTube, all the social media outlets that play music and you find music. For everybody over 30 or over 40, obviously you can find it on Amazon. I don't know if there's even any record stores existing or if they'll even be carrying it, but clearly you'll have to order it through the website that sell music, and Amazon's probably the best bet. You can buy the hard copy. It's out on vinyl just the same. We have colored vinyl. It's a whole to-do. I love the way this label is treating us.
That's great.
Hey, whippersnappers, quit making fun of my CD collection.
Yeah, we're like...
Hey, I'm right there with you, man.
Yeah, we're surrounded.
I still love holding product and reading where things were done and who's on. I like seeing the names behind the actual performances on a song.
Yes.
As opposed to just... Oh, what does this band look like? Who cares? I like the song. That's a mentality today.
Or you just pick up any random CD and open it up and look at the sleeve and be like, wow, Jeff Scott Soto's on this too.
So that old guy's still around?
He's on every one of these. What's going on here?
Well, man, this has been a real pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for taking the time to do it.
You got it. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. And it was a lot of fun going down memory lane here.
Awesome.
All right.
Thanks,
take care,
man.
Jeff.
All right. Take care, guys. We'll be right back.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.